Achieving a gorgeous grin from home isn't a total mystery with BiteClear aligners. Just don't be surprised if all of your sleuthing friends start asking, "What's your secret?" Begin by ordering your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95. BiteClear aligners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces. Plus, they offer flexible financing, accept eligible insurance, and you can pay with your HSA FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
What's up, Sixers fans? Welcome to the Sixers Talk Podcast, presented to you by Wilmington University. No Danny Pommels today, so you're stuck here with me, Ben Berry, but I'm joined by the one and only, the legend from SiriusXM Radio, Justin Fisterman. Justin, how you doing today, my man?
Ben, it's great to hang with you again. This is what we would do when you were back in D.C. We'd hang and watch basketball, especially on Christmas.
Christmas Day, nothing better. Now, you know, someone lost their mind and gave us the opportunity to do this and get paid for it again.
So, I know.
You can host the best backyard barbecue when you find a professional on Angie to make your backyard the best around. Connect with skilled professionals to get all your home projects done well. Inside to outside, repairs to renovations. Get started on the Angie app or visit Angie.com today. You can do this when you Angie that.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can spend another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. With available H-Track all-wheel drive and three-row seating, my whole family can head deep into the wild. Conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
Let's get into it. Sixers, big game 3 win over the Hawks. 127-111 final score. It wasn't even that close. It seemed like the Sixers were up by 30 for most of the game, which has been the story of game 2 and 3 so far. What's your initial thoughts of game 3 that just wrapped up?
Oh, if you're a Sixers fan, you have to be very encouraged at this point. As long as Joel Embiid, I was saying this on SiriusXM, as long as Joel Embiid stays in this series, there's no reason to think that the Hawks can beat this Sixers team. They can't contain someone like Joel Embiid. They just don't have the size. They don't have the muscle. Clint Capella is not that good defensively. So with what you're seeing, the Sixers were able to do whatever the heck they wanted. Danny Green goes down. Who cares? They were able to get in the paint all day. One-handed scoops, that shows lack of defense from the Hawks side of it. When you're seeing Tobias Harris go after running one-handers again and again, you got to put someone and a hand in his face. And they wouldn't do that, the Hawks. They wouldn't change. They kept in their rhythm, so focused on Embiid when he was out there, Ben. So my overall thoughts were, if this is how it's going to be a game like this, if this is what we're going to see, I just think at this point, the Hawks are just outmatched. And the Sixers, they can very well take this and not lose another game.
Before the series started, I picked the Sixers in 5, even if Embiid didn't play.
Wow.
Hawks fans were mad at me. They called me a casual. And that's just what happens now in the day of the internet. Anything can be aggregated and people become keyboard warriors. But I feel like even without Embiid, the Sixers have 2 of the best 3 players on the court. And with Embiid, as you said, the Hawks are overmatched, outgunned. For the Hawks to win, I thoroughly believe moving forward, they have to drop 140, 150 points a game because they're not going to beat them in the defense. They're not going to beat the Sixers in a defensive matchup. And I don't see them getting up to it. They're struggling to get to 120, even the game they won. So I think this series is still going to end in 5 games. Look, Embiid did whatever he wanted tonight. He had 27 points. He's plus 16 from the on the court. Ben Simmons was wildly aggressive, which is what I know people talk about, the foul shots and shooting the 3 ball. I just want him to be more aggressive when he has defenders on him that can't guard him. And it seemed like, I don't know what happened in the first half. I don't know what happened in the halftime, but someone talked to him and he was aggressive. He was even more aggressive in the second half. Ben Simmons had 18 points plus 14 from the field. On the court. So I just see a team that's overmatched in the Hawks, and Philadelphia fans here in Philly, they're just loving what they're seeing right now.
And towards the end of the game, you saw Ben Simmons start to turn it up a little bit more. And like you were saying, why isn't he doing that the entire game from the get-go? He's not going to hit jump shots. His post-game, I don't like his post-game that much. I think it's soft. I think he goes up weak. But his drive, he's one of the best drivers in the league. That's what he has to do. Now, if he has some kind of block regarding, do I have to go to the foul line now? Hack a Ben, that's what they're talking about. It still doesn't matter because he's going to get to the lane and he's also going to be able to drive to the rack and score a lot of the time because of his size. And because of that, unless the center's back there, and you know this, Ben, big men tend to be the centers a little bit on the slower side. They're not going to get back there in the time when Ben Simmons is going from baseline to baseline with his speed. So I agree with you. If he keeps doing that, then it's less wear and tear on Embiid. He can hang out a little bit more at the elbow and not have to move around as much and exert force.
Yeah, Ben Simmons, he's 6'10", what, 240? But he moves like a guard. So, like, most defenders, 99% of the league is either too small or too slow. We saw what happened when the defensive player of the year. Yes, Sixers fan, Ben Simmons should have won defensive player of the year, but they gave it to
I agree with that.
And everyone's going to say when Ben dropped 42 on him, yes, Ben should have been defensive player of the year. So, all right, caveat, we'll pivot for a second. Why did you have Ben as defensive player of the year?
I thought that he was maybe, if not the most lockdown perimeter defender, I think he was top five. Maybe he's not what Mikal Bridges, and that's what you've been seeing in the Suns playoff experience. He's been very, very crucial all season long, but I think he's there as well. And if you look at the difference in the Hawks with Trae Young this series versus last series, and the Knicks were one of the best defensive teams in the NBA, the difference is Ben Simmons' length. He's deflecting passes. He's closing down passing sectors of Trae Young where he can't see much. You're seeing lower percentage shots. Where are the threes, Ben, with this Hawks team? I feel like they just thought they'd be able to use that same offense, but Philly is a different animal because of their size and length. That's something the Knicks really didn't have. And if they did have it in Julius Randle, he was ready to go to sleep. He played so many minutes. So that's why I thought, even though Ben Simmons, and I hate when athletes say, I'm the best at this. I don't like that. Normally works against them. I thought it was going to be Ben Simmons at the end of the day. But am I surprised that it's Rudy? Nah.
Not surprised that it's Rudy, but I definitely thought it was going to be Ben. So I'm back to the game. So the Hawks, they won that first game. Partly it was Sixers, lack of a better term, shooting themselves in the foot.
Yep.
Plexico Burress won them. The amount of turnovers. I was shocked it was only 19 turnovers. But the other part was the Hawks shot a blistering percentage from the field and beyond the arc. The Atlanta fans, I know you guys have been tuning into this podcast. You can't bank on them doing that every game, and they haven't. I think at one point Trey was 1 of 6 from beyond the arc in game 3. It's just not going to happen. So when you have Ben Simmons out there, Danny Green, who's a good defender, despite what you saw in that first half of game 1. You have Matisse Thybul, who's just as good of a defender as Ben, who is a legitimate candidate to make the all-defensive team. Then you have Joel Embiid protecting the rim. Sixers defense is just smothering the Hawks from the beginning of the game to the end.
They shot 26% from downtown. Seeing this poor shooting just convinces me. And we saw it last series too with Atlanta, but we're seeing this now. They're not going to be able to get away with what they got away with last series. And that's why I'm really starting to think that this series could very well be over unless, and I'm not superstitious, so I'm going to say it because it could happen. Unless Joel Embiid is taken out of a game or the series, I can't see the Sixers going down to Atlanta. Atlanta just can't keep up with them. And they can lob it. Trae Young has to decide every play, lob to Capella or take it himself. But the problem is, if someone else steps up on him, which they've been doing a great job with switching, he takes harder shots to hit. And what you want to see from Trae Young, Ben, is even though he can hit shots from way downtown, he sets, and when he takes those shots, he's become a lot more impatient this series, I've noticed, because he's kind of just chucking. And if you're the Sixers and you're a Sixers fan, you're watching this, you're loving the hell out of it right now.
It just want him chucking up shots, because as good as he is, he's not Dame. He's not Steph Curry.
They're in his head, like, Ben. They're in his head. You see it.
So, yeah, it's you mentioned Joel Embiid and the health. We're going to get to that later in the podcast. Back to the Sixers and just this offensive performance. Tobias Harris has, anyone that's a regular listener to this podcast know, I've been critical of, and you and me go back for a while, you know my feeling. He played well tonight. He's scored 20 points in, what, 6 of the 8 playoff games the Sixers had. He's been a great second option for the Sixers all season and through these playoffs.
And you want to know why? And I'll tell you why. You, of course, know why. We've talked a long time about Tobias Harris, because there are two different Tobias Harrises that have played in the NBA. There is the Tobias Harris that just sat there on the arc for 40 minutes or 35 minutes, whatever. Or there's this Tobias Harris, the old school Orlando Magic lane attacking Tobias Harris, running one-hander again and again. Because if you're seeing this, Tobias Harris takes 1-3, and I'm loving that. He's all inside in this series because they don't need him. They have other guys. They have Seth Curry, who's been hitting shots. Furkan Korkmaz, who's hitting threes. Let him use his size and drive inside, because like we said before, he's been doing whatever he wants in the lane, so why not keep kicking them there?
Yeah, and wow, you went to Orlando Magic, Tobias. I'm a big believer in Doc Rivers as the Tobias Whisperer. I don't know what he does, but he gets Tobias working right. And Tobias, what I saw him struggle with when Brett Brown was the coach, was dribbling too much, thinking too much. And now it's 1-2 dribbles, shoot, pass, drive, pull up. It's very quick decisions. And, yeah, he doesn't need to pull up 5 threes a game. Like, he can't hit them. But if you have a Tobias, similar to Ben, like, he'll have a slower defender on him or someone that's not big enough. So if you can get to the rack and get easy buckets, go for it.
Right, and the difference between Tobias and Ben, which I love about that they have both of these players, while Ben is a harder driver, Tobias can hit those mid-range jumpers that Ben can't hit. So that's where you get the 1-2 punch. You got to decide, especially on transition when they're running down the floor, who you're going to stop. My guess is you're going to go after Ben and then hope he passes off and Tobias misses the open jumper rather than give up the layup. But that's a problem. And again, that's why the Hawks can't keep up. It's a size problem. And John Collins is not that tough.
So before we go to this quick commercial break, and I'm giving you got a little bit of benefit of the doubt. I picked the Sixers in 5 before the series, even if Embiid wasn't going to play. It's 2-1 right now. Game 4 is Monday night. How do you see the series finishing up?
Based off tonight, Ben, I got to say the series, if not, it's going to go 5. It's going to be Sixers in 6.
Okay, yes. Okay.
Maybe the Hawks are able to catch fire one of those games, and you know this Hawks team can. They have a lot of shooters, but they haven't thus far. That's the problem, and you're wondering, when is it coming? Because they're running out of games.
Start college, build skills, and complete your degree with Wilmington University. 100% online options and affordable tuition make WilmU work for you. Learn more at wilmu.edu.
Sixers fans, again, I'm joined by Justin Fensterman from SiriusXM Radio, my man, friend, longtime friend, Justin. The Sixers bench has been a point of contention. It's we've seen it good, we've seen it bad. In Game 3, it was good. Furkan had 14, Dwight had 12. It seems like Doc Rivers has started to figure it out, even though I kind of think it's too many people playing for the bench. He's going too deep on the pine. But it's Shake Milton game the other night. Furkan putting up 14, especially after Danny Green went out. I'm liking what I'm seeing from the Sixers bench. What are you seeing?
Oh, they gave you a little bit of everything. Even though George Hill had just 3 points and he hit that only three, he hit that three with the shot clock winding down and Dwight Howard had to chuck it up. And he got it, George Hill, off the ricochet of the backboard, which didn't hit the rim, and hit that shot. That's a big shot right there for the Sixers. That's a momentum killer for Atlanta. So even George Hill with that one shot, that's an intangible right there that's impactful. Same with Matisse Thybulle, because early in this game where it looked a little bit sloppy, Thybulle came in and boom, the Sixers got locked down defensively. They got locked in, and it led to better possessions, more patient possessions, and better offense as well. So I have to give him credit on that. As for Dwight Howard, again, and I always wondered, you know, what would happen if they actually committed 20 to 23 minutes to this guy a game rather than hover him around 17, 18? And I know he's pretty raw, but still, you need the size in there, especially going up against Clint Capella. And they don't really have, when it comes to the Hawks and their second unit, especially with no DeAndre Hunter, no Cam Reddish, they can't match what the Sixers have. And you saw it in isolated times throughout the season. Maxey coming through, Milton coming through, and now seeing Furkan Korkmaz, who's had to fill in at times this season, hit shots 3 for 6 from beyond the arc. The Hawks only wish that more than Trae Young could go 3 for 6 from beyond the arc.
The Hawks only hit 6 threes. And yeah. Furkan did half of that on his own, which says a lot. Like, Furkan has had, like, also a love-hate relationship here in Philly. There's been times where fans have loved him. There's been times where fans have hated him. But 14 points off the bench was huge for the Sixers. Huge. Matisse Thybul, come in. We know he's going to play great defense. It's one thing he's not scared to shoot it. I think he's not scared to shoot it. He'll jack it up. We're not always fans of it because when his first year in the league, it wasn't that great. But it seems like he's working on it. Like, he's shooting with confidence now, which is great. The George Hill three that you pointed out, that was just a momentum killer because the Hawks played good defense that possession. And Dwight,
I can't believe he got that off before the buzzer. I actually rewound that, and I thought that maybe they got away with one there, but it was at the last bit. I watched it twice. I don't know how he got that off, but that's a vet right there. That's a vet shooter.
Right. And it's just, it's coming together at the right time. So a question we have here, and we always talk about in the pod, Danny Parmels or Kevin Rice or Noah Levick is on the pod. We talk about the rotation, the first man off the bench. Right now it's been George Hill. Who do you think is the Sixers' best option, first person off the bench?
Man, I mean, it depends on what they need at the time. It depends on who's hitting shots. That's the thing with the Sixers. And I don't mean this to be a cop-out, but here's my thing, Ben. Let's say the Hawks go up big next game to start. You want Thybul out there. You immediately want to go to Thybul. After what I saw last game where I thought, this past game where I'm just thinking, wow, this guy comes in and this is a whole different game 3 minutes later. I think that in that situation, it would be Thybul. Let's say Ben's walling out a little bit, and let's say maybe he's a little bit too physical and he gets in foul. Then you bring in George Hill to calm things down and run the offense a little bit. Outside of others, when it comes to Dwight Howard, again, it's a foul trouble situation. Or if the Sixers are up 10, let's just say early, even if it's something like, I don't know, 26-16, maybe you want to bring Dwight Howard in a little bit earlier just to keep Embiid on the little, you know, just to keep him preserved a little bit more. Every little bit counts when it comes to Joel Embiid. The Sixers aren't going anywhere without this guy. Maybe if all of a sudden they've already won 3 games and then Embiid goes down, they can eke out 1 win. They aren't going to the finals without Joel Embiid, Ben.
So, well, we're going to just cut this short because that's our next topic. Joel Embiid, the health, right after this commercial break.
Start college, build skills, and complete your degree with Wilmington University. 100% online options and affordable tuition make WilmU work for you. Learn more at wilmu.edu.
Sixers fans, Sixers head to game 4 with a 2-1 series lead over the Hawks. I'm here with SiriusXM's Justin Fensterman. Justin, again, thank you for joining the pod. Having great times, catching up like old time.
Dude, it's weird when you call me Justin. You never, ever in our friendship called me Justin, and you always called me Fensty. It's okay. It's just, it's almost like, are we friends anymore now that you're calling me by my real first name?
Well, here's the thing. Like, anyone that's just hearing you for the first time, which might be a lot of our listeners, who is this Fensty guy? Who is this Fensty guy? Like, I say Justin Fensterman, so... Hey, after the pod, they can look you up on Twitter and Instagram and things. They'll tune into your show on SiriusXM, cheap plugs and stuff like that. If I just go Fensty or something like that, or if I got to put the whole thing out there so people know where to find
you. This is why you were one of the best producers in DC. Let me just tell you that much.
You know what? It's a whole fan of Dodgers fans that would disagree. A whole section of them. Fessy can tell you guys about that on his radio show. But end of the last segment, talking about how far the Sixers would go with Embiid. You made some strong points. He went down in the game tonight. We know he's dealing with that torn meniscus. And we'll also get to Danny Green, who went out with an injury and then come back into the game. How far can you see the Sixers going without Embiid? You said not far at all. Mm-hmm. Are you sticking with that?
Yes, I am now. But I have to say this, Ben, because I don't want people to get on me if they're like, oh, you said they weren't going to win the series. No, if they are up 3-1 and then Embiid goes down, yeah, they can get one win. I guess they can win the series, essentially. But if you're talking – they're going into the Eastern Conference Finals, either facing, well, Milwaukee looks like, we'll see. But most likely the Nets, in my opinion, they're not going to be able to beat the Nets without Embiid. No way.
No, you're right on that. He's the best. He's runner-up for MVP, which I don't know how your boy Derrick Rose got a vote, but that's a conversation we can have offline. That's still mind-blowing to me.
I'm sorry. No, I'm just kidding.
I knew it was you or Purnell, but no, Embiid was the MVP runner-up. The Sixers needed their MVP to make a deep playoff run. He's healthy. He's been playing great offensively. There's been some things on defense, especially like game one where the Hawks were throwing lobs, and I've never seen anyone catch lobs over Embiid. Definitely never more once in a game, but it happened. And I think it's some effects to the torn meniscus there. But I think the team overall is enough to overcome that. And it's not like he's getting smoked out there on defense. I think it's just little things like that. But I was happy to see him finish the game. It wasn't anything like big. I think all of Philadelphia like gasped for air for a couple of minutes because he came down hard and just, you don't know what they got. So it's imperative for him, the Sixers, to finish this series as quickly as possible, 5 games, not play an extra game and go back to Atlanta and win it in 6, or God forbid, go to 7. But finish the series in 5 games, get out healthy, so Sixers can be ready for the Nets.
No, absolutely. And here's the thing, though, when it comes to the Sixers for next game, something you mentioned, and I saw this a little bit, the Sixers are – playing a little bit more preventative defense against that lob. You see other players are starting to jump in the air just to intercept passes and deflect them away. And I like that. And Embiid doesn't have to be that guy. This is where having Ben Simmons is very beneficial. And it's, everyone's like, oh, he's a point guard. He's not a point guard. He's a point forward. He's got size, and he's going to be able to do what Tobias Harris can do from a size standpoint. And that's where, if you're going to be seeing the lob on transition, you don't need Embiid to go all the way down to the low post. You can have him stay at the elbow and have Simmons or Tobias Harris race down there to try to intercept the lob or even deflect it out of bounds.
Yeah, have it like we talked about it at a length on this pod, just especially with the Harden trade rumors have been and what he gives you and this and that. But his defense is uncomparable for anyone in the league, which is what he brings to the table. So having him in there, especially when Embiid is a little banged up, to do the thing, to jump lanes, tip the lobs and things like that, it is great to have. And the team's defense is just – it's suffocating. They have size, they have speed, length, and it's great to have. Another starter, Danny Green, he went out. It was early in the game.
Yep.
He went out with an injury early in the game. Never came back in on the sidelines with a boot. Danny Green, his leadership, his experience, I think is very important for the Sixers. It's definitely not nowhere near as bad as Ben Simmons getting injured or Joel Embiid getting injured. But I'm interested to see what changes for the team, especially in communication, because even though he's not the fastest guy, but he knows where he needs to be. He can point people where they need to be. So I'm interested to see how that plays out if Danny Green misses a game or a couple of games moving forward.
Yeah, I mean, he has a strained calf, and that's not good. That's looking like it could be a game out for him, but that doesn't mean he can't sit on the bench and still call out plays from the bench. mean, this guy has been on veteran teams, seasoned teams with great leadership in his career. So I can almost see him being a good assistant coach, like player off the floor. But, and then maybe what he could do in practice is maybe he takes someone that runs the offense a little bit more like he does. Maybe you take a Seth Curry and a George Hill, and he kind of says, this is what I do to keep the offense in line, to keep everybody moving. That way he's on the bench and he has his eyes on the floor as well. So I think that, look, it's good, the intangible, because if it was someone like Embiid, someone that produces those stats, then you have a problem. But because it's an intangible like leadership, I think that even if he's off the floor, Danny Green, they're going to be fine. And again, based off what I saw, the Hawks are just not hitting shots. And it's very, very unfortunate, because I was looking forward to seeing them push the Sixers to the limit. And you keep saying five. I'm starting to believe more five. I have no reason not to, Ben. And I'm a little bit disappointed with the Hawks.
I know. I actually thought out of the Hawks and Knicks, the Knicks would push the Sixers more than the Hawks, because the Knicks have that slow, grinded out 90s type of basketball where they're going to just fight pretty much.
But the problem with the Knicks' lack of offense just caught up to them. That was their problem.
Yeah, it caught up to them. But I thought that would give the Sixers more problem. The Hawks are a finesse team. They're not bullying anyone around. And you can't count on shooting 80% from beyond the arc for a full series. It's just not happening.
No, it's not going to happen. So that at this point, the Hawks have two decisions. They either attack, or they just start firing away and try bringing others in off the bench who can hit a couple of threes. And Ben, you are a big basketball guy, just a basketball savant like I am. And I don't understand this. And this takes me back to the Mavs for a second, back last round. If they're not hitting threes, why, when you have Trey Burke on the bench, don't you just bring him in, or any team that matters, bring in a shooter that could just fire away? Maybe they hit a couple and then the rest of the team starts to catch fire off that momentum. More teams won't take that risk in playing that extra reserve for 5 minutes.
Where someone just gets hot and teams really don't do that.
And the random player who's like the 10th man or the 11th man who can hit a knockdown three comes in, hits two threes, and then it's all of a sudden like, okay, now they're generating offense just to get them going. You don't see that anymore.
No, you don't. And maybe that's why we're not coaching. I would like to see it more. I guess maybe you see it with the Sixers from time to time with Furkan, but I think he gets minutes regularly though. So no, that's a very interesting point you brought up. Before we get out of here, because I know you got to run and it's late at night and I definitely want to get to sleep, I want to shout out Doc Rivers, because when the Sixers hired him and before the Sixers hired him, I've been critical of him for not making adjustments in the playoffs. And I would say record kinds of shows that he's made adjustments this series, and it continued to this game, not putting Danny Green on Trae Young, putting Ben Simmons and Matisse Thybulle. So I like what I've seen out of Doc and his adjustments.
And like you, I've been very critical of Doc Rivers as well. I think he joined a team that already had a lot of pieces to it. So the team, a lot of them were there already. So let's just remember that if the Sixers end up winning the title. But at the end of the day, that was a great decision. And if that was even a question, I'd be shocked. But that you need Ben Simmons's length inside that arc right near where Trey is outside the arc, so you can have him doing what he's doing. And that's the big difference between this series for the Hawks and the last. The Knicks just kept playing cat and mouse with them and it didn't work and they got trapped every time. But with Ben Simmons, you don't even need to do that because he has enough length to really cast a shadow physically over Trey Young.
I hear you, man. Fensty. I know him as Fensty. You guys know him as Justin Fensterman. First time guest, friend of the pod, Justin Fensterman. Thanks for joining us on the Sixers Talk podcast. You can check out his work at SiriusXM.com, Fantasy Alarm. You can follow him on Twitter, Fensty Sports, because I know him as Fensty, and that's what he goes by. Again, thanks for joining us. Anything you want to say before we get out of here?
Benjamin, it's been a great time hanging with you and talking hoops with you once again. And I'll just say this, man, you know, when it came down, because I don't really celebrate Christmas, but us being radio grinders as we have been, and us, of course, sports media grinders as well, I always appreciated that you were willing to keep me company on Christmas, where I always felt lonely. So thank you for being my Santa Claus, Ben.
For those listening, Fensty is Jewish, doesn't celebrate Christmas. I'm not from DC. I had no family down there. So we will order Chinese food and watch basketball games. Yep. But that's Justin Festerman, ladies and gentlemen, Sixers fan. This is Sixers Talk presented to you by Wilmington University. William U Works, me and Danny Palmels, or maybe Noah Levitt, will be back with a new episode Monday night after game 4. Sixers Talk. Talk to you then. Peace.